Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avant Card, making personal loans more personal.
1890 453 106 is our low call number. Our text number is 53106. That will cost you 30 cents. You can follow us on Facebook or Twitter or send us an email to afternoon@newstalk.com. It is time for our parenting slot. Joanna Fortune joins us once again. Good afternoon, Joanna.
Good afternoon.
First question is this. Myself and my wife separated 18 months ago. We have a 3-year-old son who lives with his mother and sees me on an agreed schedule. The separation was amicable and we're now wondering how and if we begin discussing that mammy and daddy don't live together, etc. As he was only 18 months when it happened, we feel he has not been adversely affected to this point, but want to ensure we continue to make the right choices for him as he grows and becomes more aware.
I mean,
very responsible.
Off, yeah, apps yeah. And proactive, which these situations tend not to be. It's normally when your child has flummoxed you with a question, you're like, I don't have an answer. So this, I mean, you know, seems to be a calm, consistent arrangement with mutual respect, which is actually exactly what you're 3-year-old needs and what your child will need as he continues to grow. I'm going to say to you to grow the conversation up as and in line with your child growing up, but wait for him to ask questions. Don't be bringing an agenda and information to him that he's not looking for yet. And you might find that the questions don't really rear their head until somebody has a new partner, or perhaps there's a new baby or something else coming up that will suddenly challenge, oh, but how come that baby lives with mommy or daddy all the time and I don't? It may be that. Hold in mind that babies and toddlers, and at 3 years old, your child is really still on that cusp of leaving toddlerhood into preschool age. So with babies and toddlers, we would say they lack the ability to fully grasp complex events and emotional situations. They can't fully anticipate the impact or process feelings around things. So they, in this line, you would act rather than speak. You wouldn't be talking to him about where mommy and daddy live and how it works. You simply do as you're doing right now, which is you act on it and you show him that we respect each other, that you have a consistent schedule, that you're here and you're here and it flows. So you are actually telling him in inverted commas without using words. And I would say stick with that. Once he gets more into that kind of preschool age, closer to 4, even 4.5, you'll see some limited comprehension around cause and effect that's going to start emerging. And then while he will have the ability to think about feelings, he will lack the capacity to fully articulate them. So you're going to be doing a little more talking, but still stick with act rather than talk. So you're doing your communication rather than speaking it. Your parental priority right now is consistent, predictable care with normal routines in both houses, and that's going to give him the stability and reassurance he needs.
Yeah. And even if nobody gets a new partner, there are no siblings arrive on the scene, presumably at some point he'll say, you know, he might be 5 or 6 when it happens, but he will ask the question.
Absolutely.
I went to my friend's house and mommy and daddy live in the same house.
Or when he goes to preschool or, you know, junior infants and he begins to see other families are structured differently. And that's when you would grow the conversation up and say, you know, that's a really good question. And in some families, mums and dads live together, or mums and mums and dads do. And in some families, mums and dads don't live together, but they're really good friends and they're able to parent. Mm-hmm. And your mum and dad really love you and you bring it back to them. Children ultimately wanted to come back to, I'm okay, haven't I?
Yeah.
My needs are going to be met. So that's always going to be the bottom line.
Yeah. Wondering if you can help. My 5-year-old son is autistic. He has completely rejected his mom and only wants me. He gets stressed when I'm not there to the point he can have a nosebleed. Mm. It's starting to drive a wedge between me and my soon-to-be wife. Being autistic, it's not a phase that he's going through. Any help would be a good starting point. I can't find help anywhere.
I just feel
that's
so
the most alarming, the last line. Yeah.
But I mean, it's so difficult to get help for this kind of a situation, because I think when we talk about children being autistic or on the spectrum and having needs, we tend to really attend to their functional developmental needs, but often at a cost of what about the family's functioning needs? What about the relational piece? And it's not that frequent that parents are spoken to about how your son, how your child is going to relate to both of you and what that means. So, I mean, one of the things I'd be looking at in this, the nosebleed, I mean, this child is getting into quite a high state of anxiety. Mm. But again, And it's very easy for me to say, it's very difficult for you to parent through this and say, well, don't personalize it, when it actually can feel so deeply yes. personal. But inflexibility of thought is a symptom of autism, as anyone parenting an autistic child knows. So what can happen is a child, particularly around this age, can learn one way of doing things and be rigid and stick to that. So may have internalized, daddy does this. And any attempt of mommy to do this is absolutely against the rules. That's not how I see it, and yeah. I can't accept it. So in that regard, what I have found quite useful, and look, you may have tried it, and if not, try it. And if you have, maybe go back to basics and try it again from the start, is using picture cues. So taking photos of mom doing particular tasks around him. So it is literally mum in the photo rather yeah. than a mum, and drawing out a little storyboard that he can see mummy doing these various tasks and things. Ideally, if he could be in the photo too when she's doing it and daddy's taking the photo of them, that would be ideal. If he won't get into the photo, simply photos of mum doing it and planning out in a routine storyboard way. That can be really, really helpful. The other thing is to use some prescribed play, and dad would have to be really helpful in that. I would really manage your expectations. I'd be starting with a 2-minute timer, you know, like a little egg timer, a little sand timer like that, and that mum and that your child are going to play with a ball or whatever it is for 2 minutes. And even if it's going really well, then you think, will I keep going? No.
Yeah.
Do it well for 2 minutes, end it on a positive, and gradually, very slowly build up the time. Because, I mean, while inflexibility of thought is a symptom, so is literalness with autism. Mm. And it can also mean that the autistic child is viewing the role of parent as a job.
Yeah.
You know, and may in this situation have assigned that job to daddy. And mummy better not try and do daddy's job.
Yeah.
Because they're just so literal and concrete. So they can expect a parent to perform all the parenting tasks and get anxious when there's a change. Now, that actually is what I read into this letter, is that's what seems to be happening, that this child is experiencing mum doing general parenting tasks as a change, and it's causing an anxiety yeah. spike. It does not mean that this child does not love mum. It doesn't have anything to do with that. It's simply how, through the lens of autism, they're experiencing the world and the people in it. So try to be patient, go back to basics, and use visual picture cues as much as you possibly can.
Plus also, I'd imagine, as a practical matter, daddy needs to get out of the house occasionally and go to work and things.
And just get a break,
yeah.
you know, as well. There is a very special type of play therapy that can be quite effective. It's called Aut Play, and it's a spin on play therapy, but it's very much done for autistic children. So it's very structured, it's child focused but practitioner led, and it's dyadic. And what that means is it's parent child. It's not working with the child in isolation, but it's working on the relationship between a parent and child through play, and the person who's administering it is trained to work with autistic children. So that could be worth looking up as well.
Yeah. We'll be moving to a new house with our 4 and 1-year-old. The 4-year-old has made a few friends in his creche and estate where we currently live. We've been in the same place all his life so far. We'll only be moving a few kilometres away, but they will both have to start in a new creche. Has Joanna any tips for helping them both transition to a new home and a childcare setting?
Yeah, I do. Plan ahead and anticipate regression and resistance. Because if you can anticipate it, you can plan for it. So, I mean, look, none of us are great with change as people. We don't tend to embrace change. We tend to resist it. As adults, we like to think that resistance could be mild to moderate. But for children, it can be much more significant than that. So when you plan ahead, what I mean by that is have a practical plan. You know, for example, drive by the new creche and the new house, maybe not on the same afternoon, but drive by them quite frequently starting now, and point them out, claiming them as our house, your creche. And really use claiming language like that, but also be super positive, so that when you come home and the other parent who wasn't with you on those drive-bys, you can say, oh, we saw Sean's new house today, or Sean's new creche, and it's so fabulous and lovely, and be super positive, like really up the ante on that one. I'm also going to suggest you make contact with the new childcare facility and ask for an intro to a parent who lives in your new area and see if you can arrange a play date with a child or a couple of children, in the bridge over the summer before you make the move, so that when your child starts creche on the first day, they have familiar faces and children that they are at least some, it's so-and-so, that could make it a bit easier. When it comes to moving, I always feel like if you can involve children, no matter how young they are, very actively, so it's happening with them rather than to them. And what I mean is get them a shoebox, especially your four-year-old, and let them pack and fill up that shoebox. And really, it doesn't matter what they put in it.
Don't get
caught up in, well, we won't put that in a box. Let them put it in a box. And then you put a rubber band around it and you mark it very clearly as your child's name's box. And that nobody but your child gets to unpack that box when you get to the new house, so that they have been a part of the moving process in a very active way. And then, as always, I'm going to suggest that you get some children's books, because there are bunnies and bears moving house all over the place and starting new schools. And that can be a really nice way to introduce the idea at that semi-removed level for a four-year-old, because at four, they're really in the middle of that projective narrative-based play stage. Mm-hmm. So they really do process and integrate messaging through stories. So really embrace that.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take a commercial break. After that, there'll be a question about a five-year-old who already speaks three languages. Back in a couple of minutes. 53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cents. Joanna's still with us for our parenting slot. Texter says on that question about the autistic son who seems to be favouring one parent over the other at the moment. We have an autistic daughter. Joanna is right. Every person has their jobs, and God forbid that changes. Yeah. When I started working again, she was about five, and it took us a long time to work with her to assume our new rules in the home. It takes persistence and a lot of tears, but you'll get there. Someone else says that poor little boy, could you imagine being so stressed out you get a nosebleed? My heart goes out to him. On the subject of moving home, Dermot says that sounds like a lot of mollycoddling. Just pack them up and move, for God's sake. The child is four. They won't remember anything in a year's time. Rip off the band-aid and give them a good slap while you're at it as well.
I don't know about that, Dermot.
Yeah. Is it though? I mean, Dermot's perhaps overstating the case, but do we kind of over worry about, you know, things that are just the lumps and bumps of life?
We probably do, but we shouldn't underestimate the impact of a transition. It's not just a move as simple as that, because there's a loss contained in it. Mm. There's a loss of the familiarity of creche, where this child has possibly been going to since they were 6 months old.
Yeah.
And everyone's face is known, and the rhythm. And children really are habitual. They like predictability. So when you're about to toss that in the air, you know, it's not like I'd be saying, you know, the child's uncomfortable with this, stay put, don't move. I mean, of course not. That's an adult decision, and it should be. A child should never have that kind of power over family. But given it is going to happen, it's going to make everyone's life easier to make it easier for the child.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, even just as a practical matter.
Yeah.
Someone else says, when we moved, we had my daughter's friend there to help her move in. They enjoyed exploring the house in the first day together. Worked so well for us, says the text. That's not a bad idea.
Yeah, it's a good idea.
Now, next question is this. My daughter is five and due to start school this year. She's very intelligent. She even speaks three languages. The problem is that when she has to leave me or her father to be alone with someone else, she panics. She does not stop crying until we take her back home. How will we manage this with school? Is there any way to hold her at home for one more year?
I mean, wow, there's so much here. The last question first. In a very direct legal way, yes, you could keep her at home for one more year. The general guideline, or in law indeed more than guideline, is that a child should not begin formal education before the age of four and must have begun it by the age of six.
Okay.
So at five, yes, you have another year. But my bigger question is that actually going to make a tangible difference here? Because I don't know that it's, you know, anything to do with five being too young to start school. I think it's more about you've got a child who you rightly identify is very cognitively intelligent, has acquired these three languages that they're proficient in. And what that would tell me is that from a left brain point of view, this child's development is, you know, far ahead of 5 years old. But what you might be faced with now is that her right brain, more emotional development, is not delayed, but maybe exactly where it should be for a 5-year-old.
Yes, okay.
And so what you've got is that the cognitive, your thinking and feeling development isn't in sync. And so that little gap between the two will be filled because children can't articulate to us, well, I'm feeling out of sync and things aren't lining up for me. She's going to tell you the only way she can, which is behaviourally and emotionally. And that often presents overtly in this way, like anxiety. Now, again, I'm not saying that's exactly what's happening with this child because I haven't seen them, but just to be aware that if that's the case, one more year at home may not actually make a difference to that. So rather than that, I would say, look, when you say she panics and cries constantly until you're back to her, how is she with play dates? Have you had her on play dates? And if not, can you start leaving her for short periods of time now and gradually build? And look, that could be 45 minutes if you've not really left her. And I don't mean leave her alone, by the way. Of course, leave her with somebody trusted and that cares about her and gradually build it. I would also say, you know, one of the things that children, particularly around this age, really need is experience with separation and reunification. So coming apart and coming back together. And that would mean that mum and dad need to leave the house together at the same time, go somewhere, dinner, cinema, go wild, whatever it is, go back home. So your child gets to see that you go and come back and that all three of you still exist, even when you're not together.
Well, at five, do they have that object permanence?
Oh, they should.
Yeah,
it's object into people permanence. And even at this stage, it should be in a state of what we call constancy, where, you know, it's not just you can be held in mind, but even if mum and dad are cross with you, you know they still love you and you can hold those two feelings at the centre at the one time. Yeah, definitely. By 18 months, children typically know that people exist even when you don't see them. It doesn't mean they love it at 18 months. By the way, but certainly at this age, she should. So I would say, you know, unwittingly as well. And again, I'm not saying this is what you're doing, but just generally, unwittingly, parents can give off discrete, subtle emotional cues that show a child that we, the adult, are worried ourselves, and a child will very quickly pick up on this. So if you're anxious about her starting school, she will be, and she's already a bit anxious, she's going to look at you and go, oh my goodness, I am right to be worried about this. This is not a comfortable thing. Reach out and let the school know now that this could be a problem. Schools are pros at this. They do this every September and they know what they're doing. So see what their policy is around dropping off. See what they would like to do. Talk to them about your concerns and they can make a plan with you ahead of time. Maybe see in the school again might be able to help if you don't know another child starting school with her. Identify a buddy for the first few days, someone who is going to be more comfortable separating and can take her hand and say, come on and we go and play, or come on and we look and pick a chair and see where we're going to sit, and talk very positively at home. Involve her actively in getting a school bag, a pencil case if there's a uniform, so that again she's seeing and anticipating this change coming. Like with the house move people, drive by the school, keep talking about it, keep it in the conversation.
And I suppose visit it if you can.
Oh, definitely visit it. And that is usually possible. So I think that what you're talking about, if this isn't working, and I would say with anyone who has a little person starting school in September, if they're not, you know, if they're clinging to you on the week one, please don't panic. That's quite normal. If they're still struggling, you know, by Halloween midterm, it's time to get third party help. So if your daughter does need some help around what could be turning into a separation anxiety, I would suggest you reach out to a child psychologist, child psychotherapist, or a play therapist who can help you with this.
Right. My daughter is 14 and physically maturing rapidly, so she is dealing with a lot and getting to know her body. One thing that she has not managed to get a handle on is hygiene. She has a terrible problem with BO. It's not her fault. She's an active girl, always on the go, so it's not surprising. However, she doesn't smell it herself, which I don't understand. I buy her deodorant and make her shower every morning. Yet there's still an issue. Should I take her to the doctor? Should I make her shower more? I don't want to upset her or give her a complex about it.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that jumps out at me here straight away is how much this parent is doing. I make her shower. I get her deodorant. Should I take her to the doctor? Should I make her? You know, there's a lot of responsibility on the parent. So I'm going to say, look, this is a time for your daughter of hormones, puberty, body changes. And I would say rather than just making her shower, because there's no better than a teenager to turn a shower on and barely get themselves wet, but it can sound very convincing.
Yes.
You know, so ensure that she is washing correctly and for long enough. I don't mean supervise it. I mean, talk to her about it. And when you talk to her about it, and please do, because I'd rather her parent talk to her about this before somebody much less kind brings this to her attention.
Yeah.
Encourage her to shower, even, you know, wipe or with a wet face cloth, do a sort of, you know, a very simple wash as soon as she can after an activity, because we know from a body point of view that sweat only starts to smell when it comes in contact with bacteria on the skin. It's not sweat itself that smells. So if you, I mean, it might not be possible for her to shower immediately after an activity, but maybe if she had some hygiene wipes or a face cloth and could get to a sink and she can wash under her arms and the obvious sweaty places quite quickly. Again, talk to her about wearing more natural fibers in clothing, you know, things like cotton, wool, linen, those kinds of clothing. They're breathable, but be aware that if they do pick up a smell, those same fabrics can hold them. So it might not be her smelling, but her clothes that are smelling. So again, I think you want to do a little bit of education around this. And if it is excessive sweating, you know, far above and beyond her lifestyle, her activity level and anything developmental, then certainly bring her to a doctor. But if you do right now, I imagine the doctor is going to go through pretty much what I've said with you. So I think sit down and talk to her about it, because honestly, somebody is going to say it to her.
Yeah. And probably sooner rather than
later. I would
later,
think so, yeah. And, you know, teenagers can be quite cruel in this way.
Yeah. My nearly four-year-old has never had a good night's sleep. In turn, neither have we. I'm concerned this will affect her development. She comes into us in the middle of the night and then thrashes around the bed until myself or her husband leave the bed. We need some advice. Thank you.
It's like, we need advice. We're exhausted.
Yes.
You can feel it.
Please take our
there.
Child.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, look, I have more questions for you than answers, because there isn't, sleeping and eating are one of these things that there isn't a kind of standard thing you can say, oh, do this and it'll definitely work, because it is different for different children. So she's nearly four and, you know, so still at that stage where she might be napping. So I'm going to ask you, is she daytime napping? If so, cut those out, because you want to make sure she's tired enough to sleep the night. Obvious things like, are you using blackout blinds? You know, what's your sleep routine? Is she falling asleep okay? My reading of this is that she is. It's more awaking later on.
Yeah.
So then the question on from that is she conditioned to wake for cuddles? You know, when through repeated experience, now is time to get up and go in for cuddles, or is something waking her? Has she talked to you about she gets a dream, she hears a noise? Basically, I'm asking you to track, is there a pattern to this? The obvious thing is walk her back to her own bed rather than let her into yours. Give her the kiss and the cuddle, tuck her in, settle her and leave again. Not with a lot of verbal engagement, because that's only going to stimulate her and wake her up more. But just as if you were putting her to bed the first time. So you repeat it exactly the same as you would when you're first putting her to bed, because she can fall asleep. Because I'm wondering with this, and I'm not a sleep expert, but I'm just wondering, is she waking up at the point of, you know, that sleep stage transition? So she's moving from what would be light sleep into deeper sleep, and it's in that transition that she's actually waking. And if that's the case, repeating the exact same conditions can help resettle her. So whatever put her to sleep the first time, you literally repeat that again.
She could be waking up at exactly the same time every night.
And that would point to what I'm talking about, that it's actually a glitch in her transitioning from one sleep phase to another. So you could definitely do that. The other thing is, and it's a little bit lighter, but it does work, before she goes to bed, make sure you've no screens for a good hour. I'll settle for 45 minutes before she's going to bed, because that's going to work against you. And try and ensure that she has a really good laugh. Like, I mean, a deep belly laugh, a good laugh 15 to 30 minutes before bedtime. Because if there is any little worries or anxiety being held, that can be a really quick, easy way to release
those. That's a good
idea. Yeah. So just a really good deep belly laugh, and then play a nice nurture game in bed. And a nurture game, just very simple now off the top of my head for you, would be if you take something like a cotton ball or a fluffy ball, not everyone likes the texture of cotton wool, I realise now. And then as she's lying in bed, you'd give her a little face massage. So you're using enough pressure that she feels it and it's not tickly, but not so much pressure that it's hurting her, obviously. And you can do a little narrative that you're going over forehead bridge, around cheek city, under chin tunnel, and you're letting her know where you're going. But you're basically giving her a little face massage using a quiet, calm voice, just for a couple of minutes. And that's nurture play. Mm. And that can be really relaxing as well. So if you combine the laugh, no screens, and a little relaxing touch-based game, that can also be really helpful.
Feel like I'm for a snooze myself. Yeah. Joanna, thanks million for coming and doing this. Joanna Fortune there. We're going to take a break. After that, a history of spying.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avant Card, making personal loans more personal.